Welcome to the Geek Night In, episode 32. I'm your host, Laura, and I am here this week with everyone. So I'm here with Tilly. Woo.
Hello.
I'm also here with Gemma.
Gemma?
give it a second. Skype has lag. We're here with Gemma.
No, it wasn't lag. It was physical lag. I burped.
Okay, we'll try this one more time. I am here with Gemma. This is where you say hello.
Hello.
And I'm here with Kate.
I said hi.
See, Kate knows.
I can do it properly.
Yeah, Kate knows what to do. Oh, goodness.
We're also here with the cat, but he's asleep.
Latte's having a snooze. Oh, goodness. So who has something they want to start us talking about today?
Oh, I have a cool thing, and it's a very personal cool thing.
What's your personal cool thing?
I'm looking at it right now. It's amazing. A couple of weeks ago, I went to American Dream Comics in Bath.
Oh, yeah.
And a really, really nice comic shop. I went there for free comic book day last year, and hopefully I'll end up going this year. Bought a couple of comics. I bought a Black Widow and a Secret Avengers trade paperback. And I said, oh, just not off chance, do you happen to give the Sansa Stark pop vinyls? Because they only just introduced them and then they sold out and everything. And he was like, yeah, we do, I think. And I was like, oh my God. And it was just after Valentine's Day. And I didn't really have any money because I hadn't been paid yet. And I rang my boyfriend and said, do you want me to buy it now? And then you can give me the money and you can give it to me for my birthday or something later in the year. And he said, oh, I didn't get you anything for Valentine's Day. And the TGA, first anniversary, so he just bought it for me, and it's beautiful, and I love it so much, and she's by my bed.
Aww, that is really sweet.
Every time I look at her, I grin, because, Sansa Stark is my favourite character ever, and I haven't taken out the box yet, but I think I will, because, she's not going to be worth anything, it's not, and I'm not really a collector, and I kind of want to have her in, my handbag and stuff, but yeah, she's so cool.
Be like me, and take her out of her packet and put her on the shelf.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple of other bits. I've got a Jack Sparrow little figurine somewhere, and I've got a Doctor Who one that was David Tennant and Matt Smith. I can't even remember what it is, because my boyfriend has the other one and I have one, but it was him in his regeneration. And I do have a really sort of nerdy bone to pick with the Sansa Stark thing, because it's not in the outfit I think she should be in. She's in, the outfit that she wears at the end of season 4 when she, becomes this new woman, except in the book she never really becomes that person.
Is this the one where the figure where she's in the big white dress?
No, this is the black, the really dark
one. Oh, okay, yes.
That she's made herself, and it's all oh, isn't she amazing that she's turning into this new person? Whereas in the books, which is what I see as kind of more of a true Sansa, she doesn't really become that kind of femme fatale Cersei Lannister. She takes what Cersei Lannister... I could literally go on about Sansa Stark for hours, so we better cut me off at some point.
No, it's fine. Go talk.
I'm hoping. I need to email some people, but I'm hoping at Nine Worlds I'm going to be able to do a talk about Sansa, because I have so much love for her. The phrase stan from the Eminem song?
Yeah.
I stan for Sansa Stark. I have literally cut people out of my life who do not like Sansa Stark. There are people who've been like, no, I just don't really like her. And when I got the figurine, I tweeted about it, and somebody tweeted to the TGA account, oh, she's the worst character, how can you like her? And I kind of didn't say anything because I was on the TGA account, and then on my private I was like, block, report for spam.
Okay. I'll just say Sansa Stark's my favourite character, and I will never say anything different about Game of Thrones now. Yeah. Is that does that maintain our friendship?
I think so. She's very important to me. I just think I read the book. I liked her on the TV show, and then I read the books. And I remember in the first book, her and her sister, Arya, are really pitched against each other by their family and stuff, and to me, although George R. R. Martin is not the most liberal perfect guy in the world, I saw it as he was saying, look, women are always pitched against each other as opposites, and Arya and Sansa are constantly told that they're different and that they're opposites, when actually they're not. They're like two sides of the same coin, and it kind of prevents them getting along because they're always put in competition by all their family and by the readers and fans of the show. They're always like, oh, I prefer Sansa, I prefer Arya. And I don't think it should be like that. You should, they're sisters, they're obviously very similar, and to
you
me
should, you should Arya like them both there. You should like them both so long as you prefer Sansa.
Well, obviously, but to
I
me, like,
liked the juxtaposition of the way that they survive in this world.
Yes. Whereas,
oh yeah, like she wanders off and she sort of does her own thing and she learns to fight and she, you know, all tough. Whereas Sansa, like she survives in her own way, which is just keeping her head down but being rebellious. You know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like not accepting the status quo as it's told to her. But she, but her way of surviving to me was just, you know, that's probably how I would have done it. I would have been like, I'm not going to make any obvious trouble, but I'm going to not accept this either.
That is exactly what she is to me.
Yeah, I think that's what I've...
Go on, Gemma, sorry, while we still have you.
No, it's cool. No, I was just going to say that I think that's what I... like about her most as well. Well, about them both really is that sort of juxtaposition between the two. I was just agreeing.
No, I always found that really interesting in that they're both presented as equally valid. Like Sansa's never put down for trying to just get through. You know, she's never put down for just trying to survive.
I agree. I think she's put down by the readers, though. A lot of people say, oh, she's so weak and pathetic. And, like, people actually say that she's awful for, like, they're like, oh, she betrayed her family. What would you do in that situation if you knew you were basically betrothed to the guy who killed your dad?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Like, she has no friends. She has no allies. And in the book, like, people do kind of reach out to help her, but she really doesn't know whether to trust them. And for me, it basically is that Arya is that you know, the archetypal strong female character, or she's growing into, and then Sansa is like her. One of the things she says is like a woman's armor is like her courtesy, or like it can be a weapon basically. And that's what she does. She learns from Cersei. She learns from Margaery, and her own like knowledge of the courtesies and the ceremonies, and she's very polite to people, and she makes everybody think she's stupid as hell, and she's actually not. Oh my god, literally, I could cry about Sansa Stark for hours and hours. I'm gonna reread the book.
She literally broke my heart when I was reading when I was reading Game of Thrones, and you know how she believes in princes and princesses and true love and all that, and how it's all ripped away from her, and how her innocence is just turned in on itself. And I was just, kill me now.
Okay, basically, we'll have to come to this panel and we can just all cry about her.
Yes. Also, this year at Nine Worlds, there is a supernatural track, so I think Tilly needs to just do all the talks.
Yes, I will.
Do all the talks about how it's amazing, but how it's also terrible.
I will do one talk about Charlie, and that will be the only good thing about Supernatural, and then the rest of it will be like, well,
here's where this show that I like falls short in every imaginable way.
Yeah, I should do a talk on how to like problematic media
and do it on the Supernatural track and be like, right, let's get this out of the way.
Supernatural, all of you that like problematic as fuck,
yeah, all of you that like Supernatural, you're fine to like it, but understand that it's bloody problematic.
Yeah, when people criticize Supernatural, don't disagree with them, because they're right.
Yes, you're right.
It's a shit show, but I have an addiction, okay? It's an illness. Sympathize with me.
It's the same with Game of Thrones, though. Game of Thrones is so problematic in loads of different ways. And I mean, the show really annoys me. And there's a lot the show has done worse than the books. But George R. R. Martin, literally, like, somebody was like, I treat women as people, and I saw that there were gay people. He puts in, like, two canonically gay characters. Like, wow, one of them's bloody dead within 5 minutes. Like,
I didn't even realise that they were gay, that's the thing, and that until I read his interview with people, I was like, I didn't know they were gay.
It's literally blink and you'll miss it, and then...
Yeah.
so much going on. Like, you're like, hang on, who is this person? You know, and everyone dies, so you don't actually need to know a lot of them for more than 3 seconds. But literally, like, and everyone goes on as if he's like a saint. I mean, he's literally ridiculous, and he doesn't know what he's doing half the time. And the racism. So, yes, basically, it's the same with SNL. People go, oh, it's terrible, and you're like, yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just going to say this. Tilly sat here during this podcast writing her her fantasy novel, and you're not going to have that problem with her novel because there are LGBT people, and you'll know about it.
Yeah, there's LGBT people coming out of your ears.
It's like, is there anyone in your main cast who is not LGBT?
Yes.
Oh, well done. There is some straight representation. Well done, Tilly. The straight people have someone to relate to.
I have a straight white boy just for all the fuckboys.
Oh goodness, what do we want to talk about next?
Well, this has been reminding me of actually something I meant to bring up a couple of weeks ago. Did any of you go to see the Game of Thrones exhibit at the
no.
O2 in London?
No, we okay. have not, unfortunately.
That has been and gone, so that kind of sucks. Mm. But it's here in Stockholm at the moment. I think it'll be its last day of showing, actually, when the podcast goes out. Yeah, so I'm going to check that out.
Oh, have you been yet, or are you going to see it?
I'm going to see it. I'll go to see it on Tuesday. Sadly, I was going to try and see it this weekend. It opened on Saturday, and I'm kind of glad I didn't, because the queue was immense. It's worth saying that the Stockholm event, rather like the UK event, from what I gather, you had to pay for to get into the O2 to see this thing. Whereas at Stockholm, it's free. They're just doing it at Kungsträdgården, which is just a big park, basically, in the city centre. They've got like a marquee set up there. But yeah, our opening day on Saturday, the queue went on for hours. And I was just like, nope, staying home.
So
I'm hoping it'll calm down on a weekday.
The O2 is actually pretty good at like crowd control and stuff like that. You rarely, if you get there at a good time, you rarely queue, because there's literally like 600 entrants and exits.
Ah, me and Tilly did a thing with queues today. We went to see a load of fish.
Yeah, we went to the Oceanarium in Bournemouth because I love fish.
And tell us about all the fish you saw. What did you like?
The turtles were really cool.
The turtles were really cool. I like the huge turtles.
Sorry?
I love turtles. My sister was on our honeymoon and she swam with turtles.
Oh, cool.
Like, my rundown and my favourite things that I saw today were otters. Otters are amazing. They're like long-swimming cats. They have the personality of a dog with, like, the temperament and face of a cat, and they can swim, and they're adorable, and they're cute.
We were going to get one as a little friend for Latte.
I would love to have a pet otter. I really would. Also,
have you guys been watching Crufts?
What?
Crufts.
You've been watching Crufts?
Laura's scared of dogs, so we can't watch Crufts.
I'm sorry. Crufts is my worst nightmare.
It's amazing. Oh. And one of my friends from work, her dog won its little class in Crufts.
Oh, so cute. What kind of dog was it?
It's a Shiba Inu.
Oh, that's adorable.
AKA the dog.
I'll just say. All of Gemma's messages just came through at once.
Gemma!
Oh. Gemma, what's wrong with lag, you? What's then? Happening? Ah, there you are.
He's back.
I don't know. I appear to be talking down tubes from Sweden then.
Swedish tubes. Sorry about those.
Really loud. Anyway,
left turn. I also really want a pet turtle, and we left the Oceanarium, and then I saw a duck, and I want a pet duck as well.
Yeah, I think Laura decided her top five would be, what was it, otter, cat, otter, duck, turtle,
and owl is my top five things I would like as a pet.
I used to have
a pet duck. A better reaction to...
Go on, Gemma.
It's a better reaction to that of my friend who tweeted recently about the fact she saw a couple of ducks walking down the road and suddenly felt hungry for Chinese takeaway. I've not known that reaction in anyone before, and it scared me, frankly.
Oh, goodness. So, yeah, we saw all sorts of fishes and things today. Like, we saw...
Did you know there's a kind of fish called a slippery dick?
You just had to do that, Tilly, didn't you? You just had to. Thank you for that.
It's really funny. There was, like, there's a little... It wasn't at this oceanarium. It was one at the one I went to when I was in Charleston. But there was a... like a tank with all these different kinds of fish in it, and then there's a big picture and it just says slippery dick across the top, and I was like, excuse you.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Was great. And then there was one called the Sergeant Major. That was quite good too, but not as good as the slippery dick.
That's amazing.
Oh, Gemma, did you have any topics you wanted to talk about this week to bring up? I think you had some things in the chat.
Yes, rather a tangent, but in my continuing adventure reading all the comics that Sweden can throw at me for free, I finally got around to reading Batman: The Killing Joke. It had come highly recommended for like a number of years, and I can see why, because I am a big fan of the Dark Knight trilogy of films, but I'd never actually read any Batman comics. And I've picked up another graphic novel, I think it was Monsters. But yeah, Killing Joke, I can see why it was recommended, because of just this delicious counterplay between Joker and Batman.
It is a fascinating self-contained story in its own right, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it helps to know who Commissioner Gordon is and vaguely know who his family are to really get the impact of what happens with them. Mm. But I suppose that they're still secondary characters, they're devices. But yeah, I mean, apart from the book itself, which also had gorgeous artwork, it kind of got me thinking as well on the subject of origin stories, because it offers an origin story for Joker, but it kind of leaves it a little bit ambiguous in the afterword, saying it's probably one of many scenarios he's thought up, who's got like running in his head. So, I don't know, because like also an ensuing Facebook discussion I was having, like in relation, because I used Goodreads and I posted a review up on there. Some people were saying that it didn't quite sit right for them. So I was wondering, like, have you guys encountered like origin stories you don't feel quite fit?
Yes.
It sounds like you have one in mind.
I do, but I can't think of it. Sorry.
Okay, Kate, you go on then.
There's a good comic called Battle Scars, which I found in a comic book shop in Finland as a it had been like a secondhand comic, and comics are quite expensive in Finland. Everything is expensive in Finland, but yeah, I got that. Yes. And it's Battle Scars, and it's about how there's a black Nick Fury. It basically explains it, but it was done retrospectively. So they brought in black Nick Fury, and then, you know, obviously, everyone went crazy and stuff. And then they were like, oh, we better... It was just a really cool kind of like an afterthought. And they were like, let's just do a comic that explains how he's black Nick Fury and his origin story. Because there was white Nick Fury, who looks really boring. And it's amazing! It's a seriously, seriously good comic. It's only like 5 issues long, I think. It's literally just like a self-contained little series. And it's so fun! It's my favourite origin story ever, except for Black Widow.
In terms of origin stories, like what I kind of wanted to touch on in terms of like, you bring up the Killing Joke with the Joker. I think the Joker's a really interesting character in that, like, you can give him multiple origin stories told from his own perspective, like through the trope of the unreliable narrator. And it gives you a lot of scope to, like, within one series of canon, have him recant lots of different origin stories, and fans of that particular series can pick and choose which one they feel fits best for the character. And, like, say, yeah, this is the one that, for me, this one feels most in tune with how I envision that character. And, like, it's a really nice, like, way of being able to have origin stories for characters that fit for a wider variety of people. Like, I think that's one of the main benefits of the Joker as a character, that it is very easy to let him spin his whole fanciful tales of how he came to be, and whichever one strikes a chord with you can kind of stick with, which I really like.
I like how it can also be used as a narrative device for like the authors to use, because where The events of The Killing Joke are nothing to do with what happens in the Dark Knight films, but where they do cross over is the I don't think analogy is the right word, but the contrast anyway of pitting Batman against the Joker as complete nemeses, but as two individuals who've had some sort of traumatic family-related incident in their lives, and they've just reacted in completely different ways. So the Joker's reaction is just to go completely insane, whereas Batman's reaction is to don the cape and make sure that none of it happens again.
Yeah.
And this sort of counterplay between them. And I love that a backstory can be the vehicle for that.
Yeah, like for all the problems with that it has, it reminds me a lot of the way that that Naruto as an anime and manga tried to pit its core protagonist and his closest antagonist, which is Naruto and Sasuke, was it's very much this same pitting of these are two people who had similar situations and took very different approaches to how they wanted to react to that. And I think that's always really interesting when you can take two characters and be like, they both had similar intersections in their life where one went one direction, one went a different way, and they could just as easily have gone down the opposing paths. I would love, it probably already exists. I don't know enough about comics to know if it does or not, but I would love to see a comic where it is basically the Joker's, the person who becomes the Joker in this universe became Batman. He became he became a crusader of trying to save the world, and Bruce Wayne ended up being the twisted, dark villain. I would love to see that, because it wouldn't be too hard to pitch them as having gone the other direction.
Yeah, and it's certainly doable inside. If characters get put into a nightmare scenario, it could be the Joker's own doing. Admittedly, the only example I can think of is a bad one, given it's from Sonic the Comic, when they had an issue and a lead story, which was Sonic the Human. It was basically a nightmare Dr. Robotnik constructed to put Sonic in the shoes of a teenage boy playing video games and trying to do spin dashes and falling over on his feet and things. It's very strange. That's the only example I've actually read.
As much as you say that's terrible, I kind of want to read that because it sounds amazing.
It's one of those things where actually the front cover of that issue is cited on the internet as an example of bad comic stuff, but I found the story entertaining.
It sounds amusing enough that I want to read it. Oh, goodness. What have I been doing this week? Oh, I've been playing loads of Monster Hunter on my 3DS this week. So
I hate Monster Hunter.
Why do you hate Monster Hunter?
Makes me really sad.
Okay, talk about why Monster Hunter makes you really sad.
Because they're not monsters, they're just dinosaurs doing what dinosaurs do. They're not evil. And then you have to go out and kill them and make armor out of their corpses. And it's horrible. Why is that a fun game?
Okay, so I will basically sum up Monster Hunter for people who haven't played it before. You fight a lot of creatures that are basically spins on creatures you already know. So there'll be one of them's a dinosaur chicken. There's dragons and things. Some of them are hey, it's a giant gorilla bird frog thing. And there is one big, huge creature that is threatening to destroy everything. You are not strong enough to defeat it, so you go and kill a load of things, make armor out of them, kill stronger things, make armor out of those, until you're strong enough to kill the big thing that's threatening to destroy everything.
Yeah, it's horrible. They're just doing their dinosaur things, and now they have to die so that you, for some bigger cause, and they're not even intelligent enough to know why they have to die.
Basically, that's your problem with it, is that while they are aggressive creatures that, you walk into their territory and they will try and kill you, they are...
Well, don't walk into their territory then.
Well,
they were there first.
You get scenarios like, hey, this woman was trying to take her cart of stuff to sell from one village to another, and a dinosaur ate her family. And it's okay, I will go and kill that thing and avenge it for you, avenge your family for you. And Tilly's very sad about that, because she's like, how am I supposed to know what's wrong?
Yeah, they just think it's,
I think I'm on Tilly's side with that.
Dinner. Yeah.
Mm. Okay, well,
yeah.
Game.
I hate it.
Okay, so the narrative is purely there as a framework to put the gameplay aspects there, and I really have gotten quite into the gameplay loop. So ignoring any kind of meta-narrative of why I'm fighting these things, Monster Hunter is a series that I have tried to get into several times before, and it's never really stuck with me. I have tried and tried, and it's like...
it's horrible.
Shut up! It's a series that, like, I like how the gameplay works, and I feel like I should like it, and it's just never stuck with me, and I don't know what it is about this new, the new Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate on the 3DS. I don't know what's different about it, but I finally got into the sort of gameplay loop that it wants out of me, which is this idea of repeatedly grinding creatures for, like, experience drops and working out, like, oh, if I defeat them in this way, then I'll have a better chance of being able to carve these bits from them intact. And, like, there's...
Yeah, if you keep slashing at its head...
Shut up! Let me talk about a video game I like, okay? God damn it!
Sorry.
Ah! So, yeah, it's, like, it's very good at rewarding you consistently for, like, it's going to throw you into an encounter where this creature is stronger than you and you are going to struggle to work out how to defeat it. It's not going to give you any clues as to what it's like, where it hunts, how to tell whether you're effectively damaging it, where it's going to go, what it's going to do as reactions to you. And it's all about, like, following these monsters, tracking them, working out where they move, observing them enough to pick up on the cues they give you, and then each time you defeat something, it's got a really fast reward loop for how you can sort of, every time you go into an encounter, you will collect some materials that will be helping you towards some piece of new material to work with. And it's got a really rewarding gameplay loop. And I'm about 20 hours into it, and I'm realizing I'm going down the rabbit hole, because apparently you get about this many hours into it, and if you're still going, it's like, yep, you're going to put 200 hours into it now. So that's me and Monster Hunter this week. Do you want to say more about why you don't like Monster Hunter now?
No.
Okay. I played a game.
Sorry, Kate, go on.
You have a game? Do you have a thing? I've just seen in the chat. Is it a gaming thing? What's happening?
I played another... the regular feature of Kate plays a completely random game that she shouldn't really like. Guess what it is?
Is it Assassin's Creed?
It is Assassin's Creed!
Hooray!
It's amazing!
Tell us about your time with Assassin's Creed.
Well, Kirsty, obviously, deputy editor Kirsty came down for the party, and then she brought down Assassin's Creed, the first one, and I messed around with it and was like, this is so weird. And we had just, like, a second-hand copy of Assassin's Creed 3, and everyone was like, oh, that's the worst one. But I was like, I might as well try it, and if I like it, then I'll like the others. So I tried that, and I don't know how far I'm into it. We don't really understand what's going on. It's really random, and I keep getting...
The plot to Assassin's Creed 3 makes very little sense.
Yeah, like, because I obviously played a bit of the first one, I understand about, like, the animus and everything, but I don't really understand much else. And, like, you're in America, and it's kind of sad, because you play as a Native American for a while, and you obviously know that they're gonna be wiped out quite shortly in the narrative, which is quite sad. You're also on, there's a bit at the beginning when you're on a boat and you're going from, like, presumably Southampton or Plymouth to New England, and they're like 2 days later and there's still land. Like, what, how fast is this boat? What land is 2 days away from England into the Atlantic Ocean?
That is not how boats work.
Oh god, you know what? You know what irritated me most about the beginning parts of Assassin's Creed 3? You know that very first mission where you are in the theatre?
Yeah.
You're climbing up the sides of a theatre. Like, there's a play going on, and you're climbing on the walls, you're climbing between the booths. You're not secretive at all, and somehow no one in the crowd looks up to the left and goes, oh, there's someone climbing around the theatre.
Yeah,
I heard Laura say you're climbing up the boobs.
The boobs.
That makes it better.
Yes, I'm climbing. You're an assassin who climbs up boobs, Tilly.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Like the logic that you've murdered loads of people, and but as soon as you jump into a haystack, like suddenly all your sins are gone, and they're like, no, we can't remember what you look like because you jumped into that haystack for like over 3 seconds. Okay,
yeah. It's totally and normal for monks to jump into hay bales in this city. Yeah,
and then I keep getting like in the bits where you're just kind of running around the city and trying to like get from A to B rather than on a mission, I keep, that's when I always get noticed by the soldiers, and that's when I'm like, oh, for God's sakes, you have to run around and break the line of sight by like jumping up on a tree or whatever and then climbing into a haystack, and I'm like, for God's sake, I just, because you like ran too fast, or you walked into something, or you accidentally jumped on a building.
That said,
it's really good.
Connor's tomahawk is such a fun weapon to use.
Which one's that? Just the little... Oh, it's like the hammer axe thing.
It's the hammer axe.
Yeah, and like I had to wrestle a bear. And then it was like, you have to learn hunting skills. Not really sure how that's relevant. And I accidentally shot and killed a fox twice. And my boyfriend was with foxes. And he was so mad.
Oh God. Yeah. Like, there are so many weird things about that game. There's DLC for it where you like play an alternative story in which George Washington, rather than becoming president, became king of America, and you literally transform into animals in order to defeat him. Because Assassin's Creed. Like, you go to Native American camps where it's like, we are going to teach you the Native American magic that will transform you into a tiger.
Yeah, I was an eagle for a bit. That was
weird. Oh yeah,
was
you obviously... do the eagle bit's not terrible, but
I mean, I am gonna try and look for, you know, because I imagine somebody will have done an analysis of it, of whether it's actually accurate or it just is kind of a racist presentation of Native Americans.
It apparently like, does have... like I will try and find some to put in the show notes, but it does some things right and some things very 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 wrong.
Yeah, it's very bizarre, and because then you're like the sun of him, obviously. Yeah, and that was weird as well, like, because when you're in the beginning, when you're like helping or trying to help the Native American woman, and it's so racist, he's like, oh my God, I'm not your enemy, even though like we have literally decimated the population of your people. Like, why are you so mean to me? And he's just so annoying, and then they like have no chemistry whatsoever, but bang, and have a child. Yeah. And then she obviously dies, and child is really annoying, and then he has this friend who's like, I think it kind of hadn't rendered properly on like when it first showed up on the clip, because his face looked like a potato and then kind of went like, it had no defined. I was like, is he okay? And then it's like, you know, eyes are it's so weird. And the eagle bit, I was like, what the fuck, why am I an eagle?
I'm just picturing Mr. Potato Head now.
He just had a potato. I was like, what? And then it, you know, kind of jumped into itself. But I was just like, that was weird. And then you're like running around and it's like, oh, you have to go and collect the feathers from random. I'm like, why? This is so boring.
Oh, gaming things for us. I have a new laptop that can play video games properly, and Tilly's been watching me play Portal 2.
Well, you've been playing Portal 2 next to me in bed while I fall asleep.
While you listen, and well, you stayed awake enough to be excited about Wheatley when he turned up.
Oh yeah.
You're like, ah, Wheatley.
I realised I'm really weird. I was at work the other day, and I was thinking, oh, I quite fancy a bit of Mario tonight. I'll have to see what Mario games Laura has that I can watch her play.
Ah.
It's like, I don't want to play it. I just want to watch you play it.
Yeah.
Oh, I've lost count now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did we distract you from doing your work while being on this podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Gemma, I see in the chat, I believe that you have a thing.
Oh, I have a thing after Gemma's.
Gemma, I see you have a thing in the chat.
I don't really have a thing for like the podcast, because like basically I just ended up... Well, I spent my weekend... having been bombarded actually with trailers out of Paradox Entertainment. They put out a load of trailers for sequels to games I really like. One of which was Cities in Motion. They got Cities Skyline. I think that's coming out next week, which got me into like the mood of wanting to play a city building game again. So I started playing Cities in Motion 2, and I got about half an hour into building a bus route before realizing I just wanted to play with Google Earth. So in the same way that Wikipedia trails happen.
What is Google? Sorry, what is the game you're talking about? I've forgotten its name.
Okay,
Cities in Motion. What is Cities in Motion?
Cities in Motion.
For anyone that doesn't
know, it's basically a building management game, but it focuses on public transport. So you're basically playing with cities that are already built, and they can expand organically, and you can also build them up yourself. But the main point is to build up things like bus routes, trolley routes, tram routes. There is an underground as well, although in Cities in Motion 2, at least, it's kind of clunky to use. I'm hoping to fix that in Cities Skylines. But yeah, it's wonderful, because you basically get given a city, and if you play in sandbox mode, you can get unlimited cash. It's just like a tick box option when going to the map. And you just design a bus route. You just like build your own transit network. So, of course, I love it.
That very much sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah. Although it ends up encouraging me to do other things. So in this instance, like I say, like half an hour into it, and then realized I actually just want to play around with Google Earth for a bit. And I've ended up using my entire weekend Google Earth and just drawing, like, because you can place pins but also paths, I ended up drawing, like, all the train routes I've been on Google Earth, which is not a terribly interesting thing for the podcast, but, yeah.
I think that's interesting. It's adorable.
The main thing I think I get out of it is, like, it's a nice, almost trancey kind of thing I can do. So I've ended up catching up with a lot of podcasts just sitting here, not doing much for a weekend, just recuperating and drawing on a map.
I need
which
to
is
go
kind of wonderful, actually.
I need to go back to doing Google Maps games, because, like, one game that I used to love doing as a way to keep myself to do something while listening to a podcast was the game in which you get Google Earth to you can get randomizers that will drop you in Street View on a random just street somewhere in the world. And you have to use Street View to find your way to an airport, and you have to find work out what country you're in and find an airport, just by like trying to assess your surroundings, work out okay which is my best bet for finding a main road, how much do I understand these signs to try and work out what signs might be taking me to a bigger city, where can I find a motorway, where can I find a main road from here. And yeah, I've previously lost hours to exploring countries, not knowing where I've been dumped, and trying to find my way to civilization. You there, Gemma? Yeah, I can hear you, Kate.
I am, yes.
Okay, what were you saying? You started reacting to what I said, and then you went quiet.
Oh, right, I think lag was happening. I was just saying that sounds amazing.
It is,
and
like,
I can see myself losing more afternoons to that.
It can be really difficult if you're unlucky, but it can be fascinating to be like, right, I've got like 3 hours worth of podcasts lined up. Let's get dropped in the middle of nowhere and try and work out where we are. And I did this once. I got dropped into. It turns out I was dropped somewhere into a rural street in Russia, I think it was, and. Like, in order to find my way back, like, I went through this little tiny silly city where people were doing street luge on the road. So that I could see them, like, rolling down on street luges. And you see the most fantastic things when you just go down random streets in Google Maps. So I do kind of love that.
Yeah, I mean, it's slightly different, but I've ended up noticing a few interesting quirks and things whilst... Because I've had to basically just follow these train routes while drawing this path. One of the more notable quirks actually was nothing to do with the actual landscape, but more the fact if you look at Dorking Deep Dean, which is one of my favourite name stations anyway, it's a station near Dorking, funnily enough, in Surrey. Mm-hmm. There's actually an aeroplane like visible on Google Street, Google Earth. But it's all kind of blurry. But it looks quite weird seeing an aeroplane like rendered on what you think of as a 2D satellite image. And I gather that's a thing as well, just aeroplane spotting on satellite imagery.
Gemma, you're going to be so proud. You're going to be so proud of me. You know what I am doing this week? I am getting sent a Dev Kit 1 for the Oculus Rift by someone. And the first thing I'm doing with it is I'm doing Virtual Reality Euro Truck Simulator 2.
Okay, I've attempted that myself, and I must admit it is kind of unbearable. Because I actually inherited my landlord left his DK1 here, like, as part of the flat, so I plugged it in because I'd heard Euro Truck Simulator is brilliant on an Oculus, but it's just a resolution thing, unfortunately. Having played the DK2 quite a few times now, it's amazing how much the resolution of the Oculus, like, has improved since then. So you'll have no joy trying to read, like, speed signs on a DK1.
I'm sad now.
But it's still worth trying.
I will give it a try
It is at least cool being able to, like, actually look around your cab rather than having to use the right analog stick or something.
Yeah, using analog sticks to turn in my cab is my biggest problem with Euro Truck Sim. And that's why I wanted it. Like, I will give it a go. Like, here's the thing. I'm being sent one. I could not afford to buy, like, even a secondhand dev kit too. It's not something I can justify as an expense. But when I was offered, like, hey, I'm going to send you one, I was like, okay, I'll take a dev kit one and see what works with it. Like, Euro Truck Sim was the first thing on my list of things I wanted to try. And I will still do it, even if I don't know where I'm going. I'm just going to drive to somewhere. I want to drive a truck.
It has been a while since I actually played it, because I seem to have left it alone for a couple of weeks now. That's kind of why I fell behind on podcasts. It's because I found another game. But staying on Euro Truck for a brief bit, I mean, it has actually encouraged me to think, I kind of would like a steering wheel for this and pedals. And just, like, create a truck cab inside my lounge to play this game.
I can't blame you. Like, a dev kit 2 of the Oculus Rift and steering wheel and pedals, I would play so much Euro Truck Sim. I really would.
Yes, it's probably best that we don't do that thing. Yeah.
That's fine. We'll both get that expensive setup, and we'll just, like, have... You can come around my flat when you're in England, and we'll just have the flat as, like, a couple of trucks. like only have one headphone on so we can still hear each other talking. We'll pretend we're on, like, truck radios. It's like, oh yeah, how's your journey going, breaker? I assume that's how truckers talk.
I'm actually intrigued to know how truckers do talk. I have to assume it's nothing like that.
Breaker is the only thing I know, and that's from, like, pop culture representations of truckers.
This has reminded me, actually, the reason I haven't been playing Euro Truck Simulator is because my partner and I have been playing, he's husband now, we've been playing Lego Star Wars, the complete saga.
Oh, Lego Star Wars. So good. I love Lego Star Wars. It's the only game that I will play by myself.
Do I need to get Lego Star Wars now?
Yes, please.
Okay.
On the Wii.
It's so good to play through as a couple. I honestly do recommend it. I've played Lego Indiana Jones once before. I was on holiday up to see an aunt of mine in Scotland. I played that. And we were there for a week, and we just played Lego Indiana Jones the entire week. It was awesome.
It's a good game. It's a very good game.
The Star Wars is amazing because it's, for those who are not familiar, the entire Lego series of, like, franchise things is they take, in this case, the Star Wars films, the levels themselves are, like, based on the film settings, but it's all made of Lego, and you can smash things and collect little coin type studs, and that's basically what you do. You smash and collect. That's satisfying in itself, but also, like, bookmarking each level, you get Lego cutscenes of, like, basically silent movie style scenes from the films. So it helps if you've seen the films relatively recently, so at least know what's going on. But you get, like, stormtroopers just being clumsy idiots, or clumsier idiots, in Lego form, and it's just adorable and hilarious.
Things I forgot to mention that
Can I go first, please? Because I was going after Gemma.
Okay.
Go. I've been reading a lot of Victoria Hislop. I don't know if any of you have read her before. Kate, I think you enjoy her.
Let me Google her.
She writes a lot of sort of historical fiction about, like...
Oh my god, I've also been reading a lot of historical fiction at the moment.
I know, I saw that, and that's what made me think of Victoria Hislop.
But
She writes, she's got 3 books out at the moment, and they're all really good. I'm reading The Thread, which is about, in 1917, there were Christians, Jews, and Muslims all living in Thessaloniki, which was the second of the Greek cities to be built in ancient Greece. And then 3 decades later, there were only Christians. So it's this, she writes these stories set in like these, you know, she focuses on one family or one person throughout these times, if that makes sense. Yeah. So it's about how it's very personal. The other one that I really liked was, I can't remember what it was called, but it was set during the Spanish Civil War. And that was really sad because the family started out with 6 kids and only one of them survived. And it was really horrible. But she's really good.
I've been reading Philippa Gregory, who of course wrote The Other Boleyn Girl. And I haven't read that because like that kind of put me off it. But when I was on holiday last year, there was... The White Queen was in the apartment that I was staying at, so I read that, and then we bought like in a cheap market a load more of them, and I've been reading all of the War of the Roses stuff about the war between the Yorks and the Lancasters, and the White Queen is about who was the queen for most of it, Elizabeth Woodville, but she kind of just writes about the women that like I'd never heard of any of these women that she'd written about, and like most people people have studied a lot of it, like Richard III and like the Tudors and stuff like that, and people have heard of like Queen Elizabeth and Queen Victoria, but most reigning kings had a queen, and they did loads of stuff, and like the main people that she talks about, there's Elizabeth Woodville, who married King Edward, who was a York, and the penultimate York to sit on the throne before the Tudors, and she was like a nobody. She was a lady, but via marriage when she met the king, who was widowed. But she was like a really controversial queen, and lots of people said she was a witch. And then and her mum used to. So there's a book about her as well called Lady of the Rivers, and her mum served the opposing queen. Who was queen before her, and it's just really interesting, all these women who like most, I mean the Elizabeth Woodville one, like on the front of the cover it was like, oh, you know, a sexy, wrote, you know, really sexy historical book. She spends most of the time trying not to die, either in childbirth or in war.
Trying not to die is sexy.
They are like the antithesis of romance, and I find romance in novels really tiring.
Like
The Hunger Games I liked, and I hated all of the romance. That was so boring. So it's really refreshing to, I mean, in some of the books they do love the men they are married to, but then they probably die because everybody died all the time, and it's really horrible, a lot of it. And like the way she talks to you, the way like, because it's all in first person and in present tense, the way the woman is talking to you, you kind of feel like you're sitting next to her and she's telling you about her life, and it is very, and then this happened and then this happened, but it's kind of like a history lesson. Obviously not all of it's accurate, and at the end she says like, oh, I completely made this bit up and this bit may have been true but we're not sure, and this bit was true, but a lot of the dates are obviously true, and like the battles and stuff were true. It's more a lot of the subjective opinion stuff that she has kind of inferred, and we don't know if that's objectively accurate, but they're really good books, and I'm gonna read the Tudors, I'm gonna read the Other Boleyn Girl and stuff. I've got a couple more left from the Plantagenet stuff, but yeah, they're really interesting, and like it really highlights to me women in history, and obviously it's International Women's Day, so happy International Women's Day, everyone.
It's International Sunday. Women's Day when we record, but yeah, it's like three days ago when you hear this.
Yeah, I had, last year was my favourite International Women's Day because I was in Italy and they take it really seriously over there, and like everyone gave me free stuff. Like it's a really, really huge, like in the labour movement over there they have, and everyone gives you free flowers and stuff, like it's these yellow flowers, and I got free gelato because I had a sore throat. It was amazing.
Cute. Me and my mum at the moment, we're obsessed, speaking of women in history, my mum and I are a little bit obsessed with Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Oh, cool. I've seen her her grave. I went to her grave in wherever the hell it was. It was some abbey. Abbey La Fontaine. It was a really nice place.
Oh, yeah. I really need to go. She was so cool. Like, she was Richard III's mother. She was married to King Henry in 1154. And I don't know if people were listening to this last week when I was talking about Karen Maitland. You'll know this is, like, my era. I really like the Dark Ages. Like, I find it so interesting. The Crusades and superstitions that people had. But anyway, this is sort of just before Robin Hood would have been around. Because when Richard III went on the Crusade, Eleanor of Aquitaine ruled England instead of John, who was obviously King John, who everyone hates because he raised all the taxes and stuff, and he was
probably amazing. Watching Robin Hood, where he is a lion and friends with a snake.
Yes, he's a little cowardly lion. It's wonderful, but Eleanor of Aquitaine. She ruled France for 15 years. She ruled England for the rest of her life, basically, Yeah, she was so smart, and there's not enough time to go into all her, everything that she did, and everything that she managed to do. But she had 10 children, and she managed to protect them all in a time when women were, you know, seen as lesser. And as a queen, she was under so much threat, and she managed to protect all of her children and secure three of her sons on the throne. And she's just really cool.
So yeah, get everyone go look up Eleanor of Aquitaine on like Wikipedia or something.
I have a quick history thing to say. My friend Louise, who was a bridesmaid along with me at my sister's wedding, has just launched a thing called Rebel Women, and she's embroidering like little portraits of women in history from like the year she's got like 1700 women, like the list is never ending, and she's doing like everything from like Cleopatra to like I don't know, I suppose Eleanor of Aquitaine is probably on there, to like I think one of the later people she's got Erin Brockovich on there as well at the moment. She's doing like a lot of Egyptian and Greek stuff, but she's launched her website I think today. Yeah, it was today, and that's really cool, so go and check that out.
Woo! And with that, we're going to start wrapping up for this week, so thank you very much for listening, everyone. It's been wonderful to have you all. We'll do self-promotion again in case you've still not worked out where to find us on the internet, so we'll start with Gemma. Where can we find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me three places, apparently. You can find my things are found via twitter.com/RayGunGoth. I'm also RayGunGoth on Patreon, which is where I'm trying to do diversity things and making sure I share what I do and how I do it and things like that. I can also be found in the apparent vicinity of Grafarsjörka in Iceland, according to MapCrunch, which was a random Google Street View thing. And I'm in the middle of a volcanic waste trying to find an airport. So, yay.
Oh, did it tell you where it dropped you? Oh, that's no fun. You've got to get dropped in not knowing where you've been like dropped.
Well, actually, no, it's saying view of the day. So maybe it is... Oh, I don't know.
Well, you've been dropped somewhere. Wandering around trying to work out where you've got, how to get home. Oh, goodness. There are hills.
And lots of rocks covered with green stuff.
What about you, Tilly? Where can people find you on the internet? My wonderful fiancé. Fiancé.
Fiancé.
Fiancé.
Fiancé. Anyway, we'll get bored of that eventually.
I will never get bored of calling you my Beyoncé. I did say Beyoncé. I will never get bored of calling you my Beyoncé.
Anyway, you can find me at Gathering Tilly on Twitter. And valencekiller.wordpress.com, where hopefully in the next few days I will be posting a synopsis of my novel. So if you're interested, keep an eye out for that.
What about you, fiance? I was gonna say, what about you, Kate? Because I always do myself last, because you know I let other people promote themselves first.
So
Kate,
I am
She's entering I'm into also this marriage with us.
Okay. Kate, where can we find you on the internet?
First place to find me at the Geek Agenda UK, where lots of awesome things are happening. And I need to write something. I'm doing a Jupiter Ascending review this week. That was a fun film.
Oh, you can find me on there as well, because I wrote a thing for your Fourth War column this weekend. Woo.
Yes, you are our inaugural. Does that mean first?
Yes.
Yeah, you were the inaugural writer then. Well done.
Hooray!
And I'm also at whatkatie_did, but I'm not there very often. Well, I am, but I tend to just, like, post GIFs of Nicki Minaj, so if you're into that, then follow me there.
Hooray! And you can find me on Twitter at Laura K. Buzz. That's where I tweet links to all the stuff I do. What have I done recently? I did some stuff for the Geek Agenda. I got interviewed about diversity for trans people and LGBT people and women in games, which was really exciting because it was by IGN Germany. So the German IGN website interviewed me. I got to speak to their EIC for like half an hour. That was really cool. Otherwise, just Laura K. Buzz on Twitter, Laura K. Buzz on iTunes, Laura K. Buzz on Patreon, wherever you want to go to find more of me.
Just Google Laura K. Buzz. She comes up.
Yeah, I come up. So, thank you very much for joining us all this week. It's been lovely to have you all, and we will be back with another episode next week. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.